time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
People have been saying there are too many mutual funds since the 80s. For all the talk of smart beta, they haven't pulled in huge assets. The active managers are showing up in the ETF space.
So, Dave, a couple of weeks ago, you attended what I think sounds like a fascinating gathering. It's put on by Cumberland Advisors' David Kotok. It's fittingly called Camp Kotok. It's held in Maine every year. It's attended by economists, asset managers, advisors. I mentioned Barron's attended and covered this event. Before we talk about the discussion surrounding Fidelity, can you just set the stage a bit for us? What's this event like?
Sure. It's David Kotok, who founded Cumberland, basically started doing this as a way to get folks that he relied on in his practice as an asset manager out of the daily hubbub and, you know, into an environment where they can have real lengthy conversations. And over the years, he's just collected, as you can imagine, a group of friends and colleagues that really come from all walks of the investment management life. And it just engenders great conversation. We go out in the woods, we have spotty internet connection, spend a lot of time sitting in boats talking to people you might not otherwise talk to, and you can come up with some pretty interesting insights.
All right, so you wrote a great piece at ETF.com where you sort of recap this experience, and you said this move by Fidelity to offer two free index funds really ended up being a focal point of the conversations there. First, were you surprised at all that it wasn't ETFs to reach zero first?
Not so much, right? I mean, one of the things about mutual funds people forget is that they're quite controllable. So, for instance, you guys pointed out in the preamble here that you can only get access to these funds if you have a Fidelity account and you're buying it in that Fidelity account. You can't do that with an ETF, right? So their hidden agenda here, which isn't very hidden, is to get people to open Fidelity accounts, to move money into their Fidelity accounts if they may have accounts elsewhere. And they have lots of ways of making money on that account, whether it's simply the spread difference on cash balances that they pay, whether it's additional services such as financial advisory services, or whether it's simply the other funds any investor would likely use to round out these two individual equity funds that they have actually driven the price down to zero.
All right. So give us your overall take on this move. I mean, how do you think it impacts investors, competition in the fund space? I'd love to hear what the sentiment was among the other camp goers as well.
Well, you know, we all knew that they would eventually come. And I think the question was going to be, does the market perceive it as a gimmick or do they perceive it as simply a savvy marketing move? And I think in this case, the perception in the room and my belief, too, is that it's a savvy marketing move. If it had been some upstart with some wacky fund on the edge, we would all be thinking it's a gimmick. But this is Fidelity. This is core exposure. Obviously, Fidelity knows how to run these kinds of core index funds. It's worth noting that these are sort of beyond plain vanilla. These are unbranded indexes. They're self-indexed products, which is important because that means they don't have to pay S&P or MSCI or FTSE a handful of basis points to license their index. It's really the only way they could make this work. And frankly, I think it's only in these sort of narrow cases like these sort of total market equity products, where you've got these big, broad, fairly straightforward cap-weighted portfolios. This is where it sort of makes sense. I don't think we're immediately going to see Schwab drop their top 10 ETFs to zero in response, however.
Can you talk a little bit more about what's called a loss leader strategy? This has gotten a lot of run. Clearly the thought is Fidelity is offering these, as a loss leader. Can you just describe that strategy in a little more detail?
Yeah, sure. This is a classic piece of retailing 101, right? Amazon does this too. They take the top five bestsellers and they discount them, 40% off, even though their cost is, 70% of the retail price. And, so they're willing to lose money on every one of something that is sold because they have other ways of making money off of a good customer. That's exactly what's going on here. They're not going to be making money on these two funds. They simply aren't. Now, in other ways, they could offset some of that. So we talk a lot about securities lending sometimes. Depending on how they set up their securities lending program, they could earn back some money on that. I believe they've come out and said that they aren't planning on doing that they're going to rebate all of any securities lending revenue to the fund. But, you know, somebody like an iShares or a Schwab could probably get away with using SEC lending revenue to offset fees and still end up in the green, if you will.
Dave, you mentioned this is really a marketing move, and perhaps it's already working. I want to read for you some comments that a listener sent in to us. His name is Christopher Shea. So he emailed us the following. He said, quote, ETFs have now become irrelevant on Fidelity for long-term investors, and I struggle to see how the iShares Fidelity partnership will continue after this undercut. And then he goes on to say, quote, I just can't express how game-changing this is. This is a huge comeback for index mutual funds and a major, major blow for both iShares and ETFs. And let me add, he wasn't just talking about the zero-fee funds. He also mentioned Fidelity's other fee reductions, and he noted the fact that there are no minimum investment requirements for these funds. So he actually said he sold all of his iShares ETFs and put them into Fidelity index funds. I know there's a lot there. Any thoughts on some or all of those comments?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of hyperbole there. You know, I think it is a game changer in the sense that it is a moment we all knew that would come, and now it has come. But I don't think it fundamentally changes the dynamics of the ETF industry. People use ETFs for lots of reasons other than just low cost. And we should point out, most of the big index providers have mutual fund versions of their ETFs that are the exact same fee, right? So Schwab's, you know, big giant core funds like SCHX, there are exact equivalent mutual funds charging the exact same 3, 4, or 5 basis point fees, and those are sort of stalwarts in their 401k business, right? That's where most of that money flows. Vanguard, exactly the same way. So I think it's a bit of a reach to say somehow this turns off the things people like about ETFs, which are the tax efficiency, which are the intraday trading, which are the transparency, with the ability to do more complex trading strategies. All of those things remain for ETFs.
Dave, as it relates to the overall competitive landscape for fund companies, I know in the piece you wrote last week, you made the point that Fidelity is in a position to run a loss leader strategy because they're what's called vertically integrated, right? They control multiple points mm-hmm. of the client relationship. They can make money elsewhere. They just need to get clients in the door. But firms like BlackRock, they don't quite have that luxury. I'm curious, how big of a deal do you think that is moving forward?
I actually think it's quite a big deal. I'm not worried that BlackRock's business is somehow going to be hurt. They're going to be just fine. But I do think it is the case that vertically integrated firms, of which the big three I can think of in the ETF space would be Vanguard, Fidelity, and Schwab, you know, because they have both the asset management component and the brokerage component and all of the related financial services, they're really in a position to extract value from the customer relationship as opposed to individual products. I mean, you can go buy your life insurance at Fidelity, for Pete's sake. So, and we all know what the margins in that business are like. So there are plenty of ways for them to make money, and offering this sort of core beta exposure as a teaser sort of to get in the door, you can sort of think of it as the free toaster of the modern era.
Well, on this topic, I'm not sure if you saw this, but a couple of weeks ago, Josh Brown over at Ritholtz, he wrote a great piece where he said someone like State Street, who maybe isn't quite as vertically integrated, they should be screaming from the top of their lungs that they don't own other pieces of the client relationship. And as it relates specifically to financial advisors, they should be pounding the table saying, hey, look, we're not trying to lure clients in the door with zero fee funds and then cross sell them on financial advice or a robo advisor. We're not competing with you, the financial advisor. Can firms like State Street maybe use that to their advantage?
Yeah, I think there is a bit of an angle here towards the financial advisor market. I mean, Schwab, Vanguard, and Fidelity are also three of the biggest custodians that financial advisors use for their client assets. And they're also competing with financial advisors, right? That is absolutely true. If I go to Schwab as an individual investor with a $3 million account, you can be darn sure I'm getting a phone call from a Schwab financial advisor offering to provide me additional services, making sure that I've got everything that I need. And that is a direct competition to what we might think of as an independent RIA. So, I think there is some room for the true independence here. You know, iShares, BlackRock, folks like that. I mean, State Street, folks like that, to sort of try to make that purity argument. But, you know, that purity argument doesn't carry a ton of weight when you're offering something against free.
Okay, so what's next here? Fidelity has made the leap to zero. Where do we go from here?
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll see some copycatting. To me, the logical place would be Schwab. You know, Schwab has a whole raft of funds that cap at 8 basis points. It's like their most expensive one. For all of their core basic equity and even fixed income exposures, they're super, super cheap. They'd be the logical one to come back and drop fees to zero on a range of funds. They could do that on the ETF and on the mutual fund. The actual impact for consumers is pretty minimal. I think about $1 million portfolio with 3 basis points of fees is $300 a year. That seems awfully reasonable for $1 million portfolio. So dropping that $300 out of the equation shouldn't move the needle very much for most consumers. I think what'll be interesting is to think about the next evolution outside of fund structures. There are folks like M1 Finance, which are fundamentally brokerages that are sort of trying to replace funds altogether by doing basket trading of hundreds, if not thousands, of stocks and handling fractional shares. That's where I think we can start getting even more product out there that is truly zero fee.
Dave, as always, appreciate the time. Look forward to chatting again next week. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
That was ETF.com's Dave Noddick.